5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
It's the new Panic Room. It's the show other shows want to be, and the show that authors want to be on.
The all-new Panic Room radio show is brought to you by HellboundBooks.com.
Well, 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 good evening, good evening. It is, it's Thursday again. Can you believe this? I think it's like a whole week of Thursdays, which is a depressing thought when you think about it. It is Thursday. I don't know what date it is. It is 15th of April, halfway through April. On, it's the new Panic Room episode 230. And here we are, 230 of these, of this nonsense. It's just like, it feels like I've been doing this forever. I try to escape, but Xtina actually, I'm in her basement. So as soon as I know where that is, I'll see if I can get a message out. Call the police or something. So I could escape, so I could do something else. It'd be nice, but she does feed me, so there is that. And anyway, I here she comes.
Come on, I'm with you.
Well, yeah. You know, you've been exceeded. And do you know what people that listen at home doesn't realise, of course, is that the person playing the banjo was actually a relative of yours. So he's actually one of the smart ones in the family, I understand.
You know, it is funny that you think that, you know, but the part of Tennessee I'm in, I don't really see a lot of, it's just a different part. But I will say that some of the accents around here are just darling. They really are.
yeah.
Really. I remember this one guy, he said this word, and I was like, I don't know what he's saying. It sounds mm-hmm. like, you know, he had feelings, and I'm like, I don't really know what that is, but he was having feelings, and it came out as feelings, and I'm like,
yep.
Wow, I don't know what he's saying, but it was cute. It was cute.
Well, it's like my daughter, you know, she said, I'm going to dye my hair. Well, you can do it. I'm going to dye my hair. Mahaya.
And you know, and y'all is, I mean, it's a big Texas thing, y'all. And she's got that now.
Yes.
It's y'all this, y'all this, and, you know, and it's just, she's just so Texas.
Southern.
I mean, you know, she was one, she was just starting to speak when we moved here. So she is, my son is sort of half and half. He's sort of half, again, when he's at home, he's a bit more Yorkshire than, but when he's not, you know, when he's around his friends, he's more broad sort of Texas. But yeah, she is just Southern Belle through and through. But it took me a while. Hey, what? Since when did hair have three syllables in it, girl? You know.
I was born in like upstate New York, and then we moved to Texas when I was about four or five-ish. And after we had been there for a while, we would my mom would call home, you know, and have, you know, I would talk to grandma and grandpa, you know, and they could not understand me because I had been in Texas for, I think it's Texas.
Yeah.
Texas does it to you. So,
Well, not
I've
me.
Been
he doesn't
here.
Do it to me. I don't think I've picked up.
Not yet. No, not yet. No.
People say, oh, you still got the accent. Well, yeah, because, you know, I live for, you know, 40-odd years in England, in Yorkshire,
right,
so
right.
That ain't going to shift too easily.
No.
But
I like
my accent. You know, it's funny when I listen back to the show and I think, who is that? Who is that smooth-talking guy? You know, I'd like to bed him in many ways.
Yeah, I listened back to it, and I go, oh, my God, people listen to our show. I sound awful. So, yeah, that's what I think. Yeah,
excellent.
I don't know. I don't think, yeah, I know. I know. But you know what? I've heard that we just see people, I don't think we like our own voices. You know, you being the exception to
you
that.
Never
you
never do, because, I never did. I never liked it, you know. It always sounds different because you hear it differently from when you're hearing it from an external source than when you hear it inside your own head, obviously. And it's like, I don't sound like that, you know.
Thank you.
apparently, but we do, you know, that's how we sound. And but I kind of like, I'm, you know, it's funny. I from out and about with kids, I've got the go to the mall with a kid, as soon as I start talking, people start looking around. It's like, you know, who is this bizarre person? What's going on with y'all? But it works, you know, it's fun. But no, I can't see me ever being, you know, broad, yee-haw, yippity-doo Texan, to be honest with you. But hey, you never know.
I wanted to tell this story on the show. That we just got I just signed a narrator for your book, The Erotic Odyssey of Colton Porsche.
It's a classic. It is a classic.
It was. And this is a really cool story to go with it. I had this narrator who I thought would be good for us. So I sent him the link, and he went to it, and he was like, I read the first chapter, and that is the most disgusting thing I have ever read in my life.
And I'm proud.
I know. I was like, you know, I kind of apologized a little bit. And I'm like, well, it's not for everyone. But he's like, oh, I didn't say I wouldn't do it. So he put in an audition, and it sounded great. And now he's so funny. He was really funny about it. He's like, you know, is it he called it gnarly. He's like, will this be the gnarliest book I ever, read for? He goes, oh, yeah, it will. Then, so I think that we should put that on the cover somewhere. Gnarliest book ever.
The gnarliest book you will ever listen to. Yeah.
Like, yeah. Who says gnarly anymore?
I think he's probably, it's probably, probably the gnarliest of mine anyway. I mean, I'm just trying to think of some of the others. But some are pretty, Buds is pretty close. Feeder's pretty gross. But, yeah, I think Carlton's, it's got all the elements. It's just gross all the way. But not unnecessarily so. You know, it's like if Monty Python were to write horror, that's what you'd get, you know. And it works for me. I always have a fondness for Carlton. He'd done the cover for that, which I think has been launched. Has it been launched? I don't know if I've launched that yet.
I think it has.
Yeah, we're sort of trickle feeding them out. We've got another couple to go, and then we'll have a big blast. All nine of my novels then will be out, redone, re-edited, new cover art and everything. They're looking fabulous, I have to say. Carlton's there, and we'll always have a fond spot in my heart for Carlton.
No, me too. But that was my very first Bizarro book that I ever read, and it was great.
It was the first one I ever wrote, so that kind of works.
Yeah.
So there's that. But, so, anywho, Xtina, I'm assuming we have some sort of show go. 230, can you believe that? Seriously,
no,
can you? How many years is that? How many years have we been doing this bullshit now? Was it 2016 we started?
It's our fifth year now. Wow.
Why do we do this? We're still doing
it. It's fun. I love it. I do. I have such a great time talking to all the wonderful guests that we've had.
In a sad way, it's the highlight of my week, which is the sort of tragic thing I've said this week, to be honest. But joking. It's great. I mean, if I didn't enjoy it, you know me, I wouldn't be doing it. And I do. You know, even some nights, as you know, we chat before the show, and some that, you know, it's getting towards the end of the week, and we've got that big disappointment. Thursday's always a disappointment, because you feel like it's a Friday. And it isn't.
Yeah.
So you've got that. I've had a particularly rough week, and it's I'm just so. But then, we start, and it does. It really perks me up. It really
does.
It puts a spring in my step. So, I'm glad we still. And like I say, we get to speak to some fabulous, fabulous people. In fact, we've actually tonight we've got one of my favorite horror authors actually on tonight. So anyway,
I know. Yeah.
You tell us what's coming up, and then we'll bring our first guest on.
I'm so excited. Our first guest of the evening. He's been on before, and I don't know why he hasn't been on many, many times.
Because he probably knows better, to be honest.
I know.
Probably got more sense.
Our first guest is horror author Chad Lutsky, and a little later on in the show we will have number one New York Times, Wall Street Journal, and USA Today bestselling author Rachel Van Dyken. So it's going to be an awesome show. Yay.
Fun. So I think without further ado, you should bring on our first one.
All righty. Our first guest of the evening is horror writer Chad Lutsky. Woo!
Hello.
Hey guys.
Hey, how you doing, Chad?
I'm doing all right, James.
Good. It's been far too long. I think last time we had you on was, I think it was when
during
Foster Homes and Flies.
No,
had just been published.
During the Sheep.
Before that.
During the
Sheets.
During the Sheets.
Yeah.
So it's been two years.
Yeah. It has been. I know. I still Foster Homes and Flies is still on my very, very short list of books that made me cry.
That's great.
Yeah. So I don't cry often, but yeah, wonderful, wonderful book. But so thank you for joining us again.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
So we have a chance to talk to us about the new one, Slow Burn on Riverside. Mm-hmm. I love the tagline, actually. Taking my mind for granted became my biggest regret. That's very poignant. So, yeah, just give us a bit of background on it, Chad.
Okay. It's not really horror. It is like a dark coming-of-age, kind of dark drama thriller. And it's 100% pure coming of age, in the sense that, like, you know, you've got an 18-year-old protagonist who is just trying to, get his shit together amongst a revolving door of an apartment with roommates coming and going, people with their drug problems, bad romantic relationships. It's a short book, you know, I don't want to give too much away. It does get dark, and it is very cerebral, I guess you could say. And it's also a prequel to a book I wrote called The Same Deep Water as You. It has a lot of the same characters in it. That, too, is very kind of straightforward coming of age, and it's also dark. And I liken it to some of the more darker indie films like River's Edge would be, I guess, a good example of, for those who are familiar with that. But yeah, it's just kind of got this teenage angsty kind of feel to it. You know, there's no like supernatural elements, no like ghouls and ghosts or anything like that. Most of my stuff doesn't really have that kind of stuff anyway. But it's a little bit more straightforward.
You tap into, again, I use the word loosely, the horror, or the dark parts of the psyche, which is great. Stay in the Sheets was a very, very dark, you know. I mean, even Foster Homes and Flies was, in its own way, it was uplifting, but it was very grim. I mean, it was very grim indeed. Yeah. The whole program, I'm not going to spoil it, but you somehow bring the humanity out. I said about Stephen King sometimes, you know, he doesn't need the supernatural stuff, you know, you know, you don't need that, you know, you portray the human condition incredibly well.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
Is that because you observe people a lot, or do you have a background in psychology, or how does that happen?
No, I think I'm just really observant, and I'm kind of a hyper empath. If somebody's going through a hard time, I really feel it, and it gets me down. And so I'm able to, it's kind of a curse, actually, to be able to put myself into somebody else's shoes, even somebody that I don't know, because I'll hear some bad news somebody's going through, and I'll dwell on it, and I'll and it affects me, and so I think that just comes out in my writing.
Wow,
that's a really cool talent to have, though. I mean, I know it's got to be very, very draining for you, but the fact that you can, put it on paper. Do you ever feel like that kind of is an outlet for you, that you kind of get it out in the paper and you can like leave it behind, or does it haunt you?
I think so, probably. You know, I've got some of the same biggest fears that everybody does, like losing your kids or losing your wife or your husband or whatever. And so maybe writing, you know, like Stirring the Sheets, you know, maybe that helped a little bit. I mean, it didn't really make me any less scared. I sympathized with the protagonist in that. Not that I would go and do what he did, but I just kind of understood it, you know, and I knew, as far as like not doing things like sleeping on the bed anymore or not changing anything in the house. I could see myself doing that for, you know, for however long it took to heal. That would be something I would do.
That's cool.
But, you know, even as James said with, you know, like Foster Hums and Flies, even though it was dark, it still was uplifting at the same time. And I felt that same way with Stirring the Sheets because, you know, in just I knew what it was about going into it because I think the back blurb kind of tells you a little bit what's, you know, what it's about. So you, my mind was like, oh, God, this is going to be – I'm going to be disturbed here. And I wasn't.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. I don't mean that in a bad way, but you know what I mean. I had some
thoughts.
No, I
know exactly
that, oh,
what
God.
You mean.
Yeah, and then when I got to the end, I was – uplifted. I was like, oh, that ended. I mean, you know, for a, you know, quote unquote horror author, you think that a lot of times, you know, you guys just want to stomp our hearts out or, you know, do the whole shock thing. But I mean, it ended so well. I was so, I was pleased. I was so pleased. I'm like, you know, he's, cause I like the protagonist as well. So I'm glad. I'm trying to say things without actually, you know, spoiling anything. So, but yeah, as James said, when we when I was introducing you, you're I love your writing. I really, really do. And
thank
I have
you.
Started Slow Burn on Riverside. I don't always have a lot of time to read, but I've started it, and I kind of get a like almost a Chuck Palahniuk feel from it. And
okay.
I don't know, that's just yeah, in a good way because he's one of my favorite authors as well. But I'm digging it. I'm digging it. So. You know, on that
thank
note,
you.
do we have an excerpt to read?
Yeah. If for anyone who's listening, please keep in mind because it's short and it's I could spoil it easily. I thought I'd read it. Go ahead and read the first two chapters. There's nothing exciting. It just you'll get an idea of the way that it's written. You know, it's very very lean and very kind of vignette-y, I guess. You could say, but yeah. So there's the passage I'm reading isn't anything like, you know, with a cliffhanger or anything like that. It's just kind of an example of if you're interested, this is what you'll be getting. And there's nothing dark
perfect.
In here. This is more of like an introduction of some of the characters. So, we ready?
Yep.
Go for it.
All yours.
Okay. Southwest Michigan, 1988. I was being evicted from my apartment on Broad Street. When I first moved in, it was just me. I had a job at a bike shop and ate pizza every day for lunch from the place next door. It was a comfortable routine. By the time I was kicked out, I had no job, no pizza, and there were three of us living there, myself, Damien, and Elliot. We'd just spent a summer of debaucherous bonding, so being forced apart stung a little. Damien's grandparents wired him money for a piece of shit van so he could move back to San Diego. While Elliot and I were in limbo, heading for months of couch hopping until we got our shit together. We had less than a month to leave, and most of that time was spent on our ripped-to-shit couch doing everything but searching for another apartment. Elliot didn't have a job either, so to stave the anxiety that comes with facing homelessness, we pretended our final month there would last forever and ignored all urgency. In the meantime, our friend Bobby started hanging around and suggested we get a place with him, despite us not being able to contribute. I think he just liked being around us, like his street cred went up or something. Anything to steal attention away from that miserable mullet of his. While Elliot and I slacked, Bobby took care of the apartment hunt, searched through the paper, filled out the applications. A week went by and he found a duplex over on Riverside Drive, with a pond behind it and woods beyond that. A great view in a stellar neighborhood. The kind of place we had no business living in. But against all odds, they rented to Bobby. So we loaded the couch into a truck Bobby borrowed and headed over, tainting the new place with our undeserving selves. That was the beginning of our slow burn on Riverside. The apartment only had one bedroom, which Bobby got because he was the breadwinner. He was like our sugar daddy, but without the sex, just the street cred. We were pathetic, every one of us. I slept on the couch and Elliot on the floor. While I didn't offer much in the way of paying bills, I wasn't as lazy as him, so I got the next tier down in sleeping seniority. The landlady lived on the other side of the duplex, not an ideal situation for a group of guys who didn't have their shit together. It was like living next to your parents or your boss, always under the microscope. The landlady's name was Sarah. She was in her 30s, single and damn fine. Always done up, sunglasses, had this high ponytail tightly pulled back that really did it for me. And she smelled like cucumber rain from a midnight sky. Very classy. Sometimes I get the feeling she'd like to hang out with a couple of 18-year-old pathetics. because she knocked on the door a lot that first week, making small talk, smiling a lot. There was something in that smile, more of a smirk, really. But I couldn't tell if she was being flirty or if that's just me being an 18-year-old guy. We tend to read things that aren't there. Elliot got a job at the local pound. I went in one day to visit him and left with a dog, a golden retriever named Britton. Bobby wasn't too happy about it, neither was the landlady. 2 days later, she took Britton back to the pound when none of us were home. I couldn't afford to get him out, so I had to leave him there. I hated the bitch for doing that. We got into it, and she made a scene, telling me I had no business getting a dog. She was right. I could barely take care of myself. The couch was brought from Broad Street. The couch we brought from Broad Street drove Bobby nuts, so he got a new one he found on the curb. My friend Rob and his brother Skip came over to pick up the old one. They wanted it for their new bedroom in their parents' attic, which is more like a studio apartment. The couch was all torn to hell, so I gave them an old bedspread to cover it and help keep the sponge inside. Otherwise, you'd get that shit all over you, like little yellow parasites. Girls complained about it when they came over. They'd leave with it stuck on their perfectly sculpted hair, and we'd just lose it. I'd known the brothers for about 4 years. At only 18, Rob was already losing his hair and plumping out like he'd just given up. He was a good guy, a real big heart, but both him and his brother had a thing for porno mags. They'd even steal them from each other. One time, Rob's bedroom door was locked, and Skip got so horny for the glossy spreads that he put a hole in the wall, climbed through, and stole the mags. I knew what it's like to be a horny teen, but that's some next-level shit. I guess now that they shared a bedroom, they had a community stash, a paper harem. That's it. That's all I read.
Oh, I wanted you to keep going. No, it's just...
I was enjoying that.
Yeah. like you said, though, it's there's nothing really exciting that's happening, but at the same time, you just want to...
Yeah.
You want more. You want to keep, you want to find out why, what's... So I really enjoyed it. And this is one of the things that I do when I read something, because we've discussed this on the show before, and, you know, everything you write has a bit of you in it. You know, I think it just always mm-hmm. comes out like that. So how much of you is in the story, if you can tell us?
Well, as I said, this is a prequel to The Same Deep Water as You, and The Same Deep Water as You is essentially about 90% nonfiction. And I didn't market it like that. I just wrote it like that. It was like a summer and winter in my life when I was 19 and 20. And then, I threw a couple things in there to just add some drama and some screwed up stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, people die, stuff like that. Like in people die in this one too. And a lot of the people who die in these are really dead. But that's not how they died. But this one, Slow Burn in Riverside, it has a lot of nonfiction. As a matter of fact, everything I think I just read was – every bit of that was true.
Hearing that. I do.
Yeah. So, and that was like when I was 18. I had a really adventurous like 6 years. And not that it's worth, like, writing an autobiography about. It's just it interests me to kind of put it into, like, make a story about it, but make it, you know, add other elements to it and just use, you know, I think every writer uses their own experience, you know. They write a character up based on a friend, or they write a scene based on something that really happened. Well, I thought that it would be fun if I just took some of the most like adventurous times that I had, and just instead of like putting a bit here in this, you know, in Skullface Boy or this in this, you know, book, I'll just write the whole thing out, and then I'll add some things that where people would want to maybe read it and really get a story out of it. Mm-hmm. And so it's been the easiest to write. Both of these have been because all I had to really do is, you know, I've got a great memory, fortunately, mm-hmm. because in this time did a lot of, you know, drugs and drinking and stuff. And, it's been 30 plus years since I've done stuff like that. So, but thankfully, I was blessed with a pretty good memory. So I can remember a lot of my childhood, a lot of my teen, you know, most everything, like going back to the age of 3. So it's kind of freaky. And it's been a great blessing that I was able to retain a lot of that stuff and remember how I felt in that moment, you know, like falling in love for the first time or getting my heart broke a number of times, things like that. I think that's it helps to remember how you felt and to remember those experiences so that you can draw from them.
Mm. You know, I have to admit, having a 17-year-old son and, you know, knowing that this was, you know, you're 18, 19-ish or whatever, I'm like, oh, God, oh, God. It's scary to think. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It's very scary having teenage kids.
Yes, definitely. So what are you working on now?
I am working on, actually, I've been really procrastinating lately, so I haven't been doing anything I'm supposed to be doing. I've got some short stories that are due for invites and things like that. And but I just signed a three-book deal with Silver Shamrock starting in 2022. They're releasing the collections, and they're all going to kind of be, just short story collections, but like novella length, like 30 to 40,000 words, not huge tomes or anything like that, just smaller collections. And they've signed a handful of authors so far, and I'm one of them. And so they'll be over the next, you know, 3 or 4 years, there will be three collections released. And so that I have coming out. And then I am writing I'm just at the very, very beginning stages of writing a book with very well-known author in our circles. And I haven't really, I mean, if you search, you can probably see us talking a little bit about it cryptically, but I haven't, no official announcement has been made, but you could probably figure it out pretty easy if anyone follows me on Twitter or Instagram or anything. But, I've been writing a book with, two books actually, with John Bowden. I love writing with a guy, but he doesn't have much time, and he just bought a beautiful new home, and so that's taken all of his time, because he's also writing a book with Bob Ford, another book with Bob Ford. So that's on the back burner, and then I have some other stuff that I'm writing that I have no idea when will be out. I was hoping to get like 6 books out this year, and
wow.
I have 3 out already. One is under a pen name, one is under a, I don't know, you call it a pen name. It's under C. E. Lutsky, and it's just a vampire thing. And I put it under that name because it's so different than you know. Every time I put a book out, people are all, "Oh, I can't wait to get my heart broken," and they have these expectations, and I start getting really stressed out about that. You know, because that's not what I was trying to do. Is with every book is break someone's heart or yes. something like that. So I did this vampire thing under C.E. Lutsky, and I did that, and then I did something else under a pen name, and then I did Slow Burn on Riverside. And so I would love to have 3 more out. Of course, it could happen, because I don't write these giant, you know, doorstoppers. Mm. So we'll see.
Well, good luck with that.
Yeah,
I'm a bit jealous, actually. You get, you know, the volume of stuff you're putting out, and I'm still working on my latest novel that I've been working on for, is it 3 years now?
It just needs
one last damn good edit, you know, and one good draft really to go through, but. Time just, you know, slips by, and one thing another, and life happens, as they say, and but I kind of harbor some hope, and don't quote me on this, that I'll get it done this year, but you never know, I know, but yeah, I know, see, Chad was saying about expectations. Now, if I don't finish it, Xtina will never forgive me, so I've got that burden. Mm.
Man, I remember reading the short story, and even then I was like, no, these are full length, you know, these are real characters here. They definitely deserve way more than a short story. So I'm, you know, I can't wait. I'm excited. But As for you, Chad, I am very, you know, curious now about this project that you kind of mentioned a little bit, and I'm going to be stalking you to see if I can figure it out.
Okay.
There's definitely that. And you mentioned, you know, a few that you're, you know, writing with people. And how do you like that? Do you enjoy co-writing?
Yeah, I do. It's been a different process for every time that I've done it. And it's something that, and there's even a couple like kind of failed ones that, and I only say failed because you can't just write with just anybody, even if you're really good friends with somebody. It just doesn't, sometimes it doesn't work, you know. Sometimes,
yeah.
Like I wrote Wormwood last year with Tim Meyer, and Tim is such a laid-back guy that, and I'm such a more of like a, I don't know if alpha is the word, but I'm kind of a control freak. And so Tim allowed for that, like in space. So, but if we had two of me, that's kind of difficult to work out. So, so that worked out really well for us and has gotten a really good reception. So I'm really glad I did that. And Tim is a great guy and very, very easy to work with. So, yeah, I'm kind of anxious to get started on this next thing and see if we butt heads. And even if we do, you know, I'll make sure that I make it happen because I really like this guy and his writing and stuff. So, we'll make it happen.
Yeah,
for sure.
That was going to be, I guess, my next question is that when you aren't writing, who do you like to read? And have you read any really good books lately?
Oh, man, I'm reading a book right now that's kind of, I guess you'd call it research for this co-writing thing that I'm going to be doing. I'm reading Communion by Whitley Strieber. Have you guys ever read that?
Oh, many, many years ago, yes.
Oh, I love it.
Oldie but goodie, yes, it is.
Yeah, it's so creepy. And books don't really unsettle me that well. They don't really, like, scare me or anything. But this is pretty scary. It's scary stuff, but I love, my favorite authors are like Jack Ketchum and Joe Lansdale, Raymond Carver, you know, of course, like Stephen King and Robert McCammon, you know, kind of the usual suspects, and Clive Barker. But I'm particularly Joe Lansdale and Jack Ketchum, and that has a lot to do with both their prose and, you know, of course, they're two completely different styles.
Absolutely, yeah.
But I would say I probably write more like, much more like Lansdale, but my content is more like something that Ketchum would do, unless I'm getting silly with something like I did with the Neon Owl, where it's more of a, much more kind of like a Happen Leonard silly crime thing, lots of laughs. With the dark moments, very, you know, black humor. But those guys
in particular. Yeah, Joe does that incredibly well. You know, he's a big fan of Joe's as well.
Yeah.
Now, you mentioned the vampire book, and I just have to mess with you a little bit here. But there's no sparkly vampires, right? These are like, you know, scary one.
Oh gosh, really?
No, good lord, no.
No, I'm a huge vampire fan. I go back to my Buffy and Buffy's vampire days. As a matter of fact, which nobody cares about this, but I just got a cute little key fob that says it's from the Bronze, which, you know, only Buffy nerds will get that. But I'm guessing neither one of you guys know what the Bronze is, so I just, you know.
Do you know, I never saw it. I never saw one episode. Seriously, never watched it.
I love Buffy. Now, the first season is kind of, you know, shaky, but then it picks up, and it's great. I love it. I don't know how many times I've seen the show, and it never gets old for me. So, you know, but that's my, you know, I've loved vampires for a really long time, and when people say, you know, I wrote a vampire book, my mind goes to, you know, Angel and you know, even Twilight or something. So these are like scary vampires you're writing about?
I wouldn't say no, not really. As a matter of fact, I pretty much took all of like the supernatural type elements out of it, and it's a girl who basically has a more like a condition. Think like if Dexter were a girl and had to live off the blood, then that's kind of what this is like.
I like
she's,
that.
She's like a vigilante, and she owns a tattoo shop in Los Angeles, and she's been turned and has been living like this for a year, and her her best friend is an attorney. So he kind of points her in the direction of where a good target might be, and most of these she does not even kill. So it's more like there's a lot of investigative type of stuff going on in it too. I mean, there's death in the book for sure, but when she can get away with it, she would prefer just kind of like, making a withdrawal, I guess, and then doing mind wiping where their victim doesn't remember anything and even tries to help them with, like a kid that she has working at her tattoo shop at one point was a pill junkie, and she drank from him and wiped his mind and helped him with his habit. Of course he doesn't even know, but so she's kind of like this, I don't know if I call her a superhero, but like this dark vigilante person, and she's trying to figure out, this is all kind of new to her. So there's a lot of trial and error along the way, but I pretty much took the supernatural stuff out of it.
I want to read it. Sounds really awesome. I love vampires. I do. So I like it. And on that note, I think we're just about out of time for our first segment, Chad. I had so much fun with you, and you have to promise to come back.
Yeah, I appreciate you guys having me on here, and for all the kind words and stuff, that means a lot.
Definitely,
brilliant.
Definitely.
So tell us where we can find you.
You could just type in my name wherever, and something will pop up, but my website is chadlutzke.com, chadlutzke.com, and I've got a Patreon page. I love getting patrons, because then I get to have more time to write.
Eat.
And
you get to eat,
and yes,
which is
and
always
eat,
jolly.
And pay my bills. I'm very grateful for that. And then, I got a podcast called Paleo Cheese Podcast, and it's me and my buddy Jeremiah, and we talk horror films and a lot more than that. Some of our we've had a lot of guests on there. Like we've had Joe Lansdale and Josh Mellerman and Jeremy Wagner and just a ton of people. It's been fun.
Awesome.
For all of our listeners out there, go out and buy Slow Burn on Riverside by Chad Lutzke. And thank you
Please
so
do.
Much, Chad. We had a great time. Yeah.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you so much. We'll speak to you again very soon.
All right. You guys have a good night.
Okay. Good night. Bye-bye.
Bye.
So it is time for Exterior to crack open another bottle of wine. So we'll be right back.
Room Radio Show is brought to you by Hellbound Books Publishing, purveyors of all manner of dark fiction. You can find the publisher, along with links to all of their available works across platforms, at hellboundbookspublishing.com. In the mood for something steamy to read? Check out erotica author Jennifer Lynn at jenniferlynnerotica.com. You can find James and Extina at their respective websites, jameslongmore.com for James and darkpoetprincess.com for Extina. Don't forget to follow The Panic Room on social media, Facebook unofficial, The Panic Room Radio Show, our Vimeo channel with all of our previous shows, the new Panic Room Radio Show, and come visit our website, www.panicroomradio.com.
Welcome back to part two.
Well, 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 here we are again. And, it's sort of entered this sort of time warp when we're doing this show. It's time goes so quickly, which is great. Now, it's always nice to chat to Chad again. I can't, speak to these people again and then realize it's been like 3 years. And like, A, wow, we've been going that long. And B, it only seems like yesterday, you know. And it's 6 books out this year. I hate him. How dare he? I haven't managed one book in how many years? Don't want to talk about it. But, said, stuff happens and, you sort of prioritize feeding the children. Apparently you have to feed them, I'm told. You know, some sort of legal requirement, feeding the kids. So there's that. But the thing is that the more you feed them, the more they hang around, you know. So I'm not sure that's the best strategy half the time.
No, I was going to say that you personally have not put out any books in a little bit, but how many books have we published under Hellbound? I mean, those are our babies too, you know.
We're well over the 100-odd mark now. Well mm-hmm. over that. I think we passed. We've got 50-odd audiobooks alone.
I know, and they're sounding so good. I'm finding so many great narrators, and I love them all. I do. I'm so excited about them. Mm-hmm. When I get like a really good one, I'm like, oh God, because sometimes you'll get the auditions and they just read it, and even though they read it well, they're just reading. I like the ones that give it all they have and they put they just act it out. I remember the Blood in the Woods is one of my very first ones that I loved so much.
Mm-hmm.
The narrator did such a great job, and
yes,
there was a little
absolutely.
Part. There was a little
yeah.
part in the book where the boys did a little like rap, and he actually went and found the song that they were trying to rap so that he could get the beat right. I'm like, that's dedication.
Wow, there you go. That's what makes some stand out from the others. I mean, you full disclosure, it's entirely your department. You've managed to listen to every one of those, and whilst I haven't. In many ways, I think all of mine. Well, once Colton comes through, I think all of mine are the audiobooks.
Yeah.
I haven't listened to one of them. And the first few, you'd say, "Do you want to listen now? Do you want to listen to the?
Yeah.
You know, do you want to listen to them right now? I trust you. I mean, you pick phenomenal people. It's just like no, just whatevs. You know, whatevs."
Yeah,
people say, which is fine. You do a great job, and they're always well received. So much so we do audiobooks for other people now, which is kind of weird, mm-hmm. but hey ho, I just say it's all good stuff. But do we have something happening next? I mean, to be fair, full disclosure. So you can tell I've been binge watching Better Call Saul. It's been on my must watch list for so long. And, I had a conversation with somebody last weekend, and it's like, okay, well, I just finished binge watching something, Schitt's Creek. Mm-hmm. And I was looking for my next binge watch, and I thought, because I love Breaking Bad, and it's Vince Gilligan. I mean, and it's brilliant. Mm-hmm. I'm on season three now. It is fantastic. The guy, Bob Odenkirk, who plays Jimmy McGill, brilliant. Absolutely.
Yeah.
He is a sleazy, rule breaking sort of lawyer, but he sort of muddles through, and but it's great. I would recommend it. But so obviously, there's a lot of legal speak coming out now. It's like full disclosure and stuff, So I can sound clever.
failing miserably, obviously.
Yeah,
but,
I loved Breaking Bad, and I think I tried Better Call Saul, and I wasn't too impressed, but I don't think I watched too much. So.
Stick with it. It's got that
sort
of grubby feel to it, you know.
Because
they're also, it's like two parallel stories that there's Saul, or who could become Saul, and the other guy, Mike Trout. So they've got the two, and their storylines sort of cross every now and then, and then they're both doing different, and it's great to see the backstories of the characters, both great characters in Breaking Bad, so I'd recommend it. I'm thoroughly enjoying it. Normally, you know, because time is too bloody short, if something doesn't grab me by the second one. And having said, the other thing I'm watching is Them, which is on... Where the hell is that? Is that Amazon Prime? Amazon Prime. I think I've seen the first two now, and it's good. It's very, it's set in the 50s. Imagine the soundtrack's pretty damn good. And there's a black couple moved into the whitest of white neighborhoods. There's creepy supernatural things afoot as well, but a lot of the uneasy feeling, because you see it from the family's point of view, is the prejudice and the absolute unfiltered hate that is directed to, you know, the fact that they just, as we drove into the estate and people just looking at them like, wow, you know, to be made to feel, and this is their home, you know, and they're just being made to feel like crap. So, I'm sort of juggling between that and Better Call Saul at the moment. But, it's shaping up well. It's got some good creepy moments in it.
We watched the very first, what do they call it? The pilot of some show last night, some new show that's Joss Whedon as, you know, directed and written and all that stuff.
Right.
And I love him. I don't know. I'm sure the boyfriend is listening, so I'm waiting for him to, you know, write me really fast and tell me the name of the show because I can't remember what it was. But it was weird. I don't know if I liked it or not. I mean, I ended up going, I might watch it again, but it was weird. It was weird. And when he does, there we go. It's called The Nevers.
I've seen the trailers for that. Yeah, I didn't realize it was Joaquin actually. So I may give that a look because he does some decent stuff. Yeah,
that's me. I'm thinking because it's him, I might keep. And he's definitely got the girl power in there, which he's very big on. You know, girl power, which is kind of cool. So I might watch it again more just because. It's Joss Whedon, and I think he's great. So it was weird, but kind of good. So
cool. So anywho, you promised me some steam for the second half of our show.
I did. Must confess, all right.
I don't have enough steam in. I don't have any steam in my life, to be honest. Any is welcome. So what have we got coming up next?
All righty. Our second guest of the night is number one, New York Times, Wall Street Journal, and USA Today best-selling author, Rachel Van Dyken. Woo!
Well, good evening.
Yay!
Hi, guys. How are you?
Hey, we're good. How are you? Well, I'm good. I can't speak for Xtina, obviously, but I'm good.
Enjoy watching talks. I'm like, ooh, writing stuff down. So, yeah, doing great.
Yeah, Rachel is calling from, she's in Mountain Time, and so we got, like, you know, Mountain Time, and then James is on Central, and I'm on Eastern. So it's like all these weird time zones going on. I think we could write some cool story about the, different... Yeah, I used to joke around. I had these friends that lived in New Zealand, and, you know, they were like a day and a half ahead of us. And I'm like, you know, if anything bad happens, just give me a heads up.
Let me know.
And they never did. They never did.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of, I've actually got, as a guy I'm working with, he's in Sydney at the moment, you know, well, he lives in Sydney, and it's like they're 16 hours ahead, and it's just mind-blowing.
Yeah.
I was actually, we were emailing each other, so it was like 6 o'clock my time, and it was like, you know, he was just starting his day, you know, it's like, it's just very,
yeah.
You know, coming from a small country where we only had the one time zone, you know, I don't think I will ever get used to it. I don't think I ever will. I nearly missed a Zoom meeting last Friday because they sent me over at 2 p.m. So I'm sat there and then I get this call saying, are you joining us? Well, yeah, I'll do it too. Yeah, but, you know, it's like 2 hour time now. Oh, for fuck's sake, you know. But, so, hey-ho.
I've done
there
that.
There you go.
Yes, I've done that.
Yes, same here. Especially 2020 with all the Zoom calls. It got really intense. And I have a call with China on Monday. But it's Tuesday, so it's been like, so like we keep like going back and forth, and I'm like, okay, because I said Tuesday, but then they're like, it's Monday for you, and I'm like, okay, so I have to like process this half in my head.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh, that hurts my head a little just thinking about
yeah.
it.
Yeah, it can be a bit mind-bending, yes.
So Rachel's here to talk to us about her book, the Mafia Royal series, Ruthless Princess.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about it.
Yeah, so it's actually, it's a spin-off series from my main Mafia series that I started about a decade ago, which it makes me feel old when I say that, but it was a best-selling series I had, and it was basically like, if you take Hogwarts meets Gossip Girl with a little bit of those, like, drawn in, that's kind of like what the series is about. They're all at, like, a private university, but the Mafia owns it, and so basically what I did is this Ruthless Princess is the story about the daughter of one of the main mob bosses, and the one rule that all the bosses gave all the kids that are, like, not cousins, but they're all part of, like, the five families, but they're not allowed to date. So it's, like, this whole forbidden mm-hmm. love thing. So the first book is about this forbidden love between her and her father is basically, like, other enemy, kind of Romeo and Juliet style. So, yeah, so it's a spin-off of that, and it's really – I was trying to find an excerpt for you guys, and I was like, oh, no, like, I didn't think it was this graphic. I have to read this out. So, yeah, and it's a romance – but it's basically lots of suspense. And the reason that I even started writing it was because my husband refused to read any of my books. He was like, no, I don't want to read that. Like, I don't, you know, read stuff like that. You should write a book about, like, suspense, about mafia. And we had a guy that was living, like, 30 miles from us in our small town at the time that was actually hiding out from the mafia, from the police, not the mafia, and the FBI. And they raided his house. And he'd been hiding out for, like, 20 years as a farmer, like, living undercover.
Wow.
And they found, like, weapons in his house, and they found like over $200,000 in cash, and the townspeople loved him so much, petition the court not to send him to prison because he was part of like the PTA and like all these different things. So like that's kind of what inspired the series to begin with. And so like every time people ask me, I'm like, no, but look, this is like partially based on a true story because this guy so yeah.
That's awesome. That's so cool. Yeah, you know, I read romance as well. And I have to say, I like the dark romance. The mm-hmm. mafia, I've never read a mafia romance yet. I've done the, you know, the kidnapping and all different ones here. And I'm going to have to give this the mafia thing a shot. I just, I don't even have a reason for not reading them yet. I just haven't. So I'm definitely going to have to try. Yeah, I was going to ask that with, you know, the mafia thing. Did you have to do a lot of research, you know, or do you just pretty much, you know, kind of make it up? You know, I mean, because you can really do anything. I mean, I remember the biker thing, motorcycle mm-hmm. club, when that was like really big. And I had a friend, and I loved the show. Oh gosh, Sons of Anarchy. I loved it. I did.
Yep.
I had a girlfriend who belonged to a motorcycle club, and I remember asking her one time, jokingly, I was like, you know, is it anything like Sons of Anarchy? And she's like, if I told you, I'd have to kill you. So she never told me. So, yeah, I'm wondering if there's like a lot of research or you just kind of, you know, do you make it up?
No, it's all research. When I first started out,
awesome.
I didn't want to be that. I didn't want anyone to be able to have any power to come to a review and say, like, this isn't accurate or this isn't how the mafia is. I actually have three beta readers who have connections to the mafia, the Italian mafia.
Wow.
So, and one of them, her grandpa was part of the Gambino family. And she used to have Frank Sinatra would come to her house. Literally, so cool.
Awesome.
The stories are really, so whenever my biggest pet peeve is if I get a review and someone's like, that's not accurate, I want to, punch something because I'm like, no, we don't even know. But then I can't say anything because these people are all obviously, under NDAs and stuff. But, no, it's a lot of research. That's the I have a thing called the Mafia Bible, and it's probably 1,000 pages of just, information on the Italian Mafia, the Cosa Nostra. So I do, and I, make sure everything is very, very close to what the five families were like in Chicago. The only thing made up would be the last names, because obviously I don't want to get murdered. So
that, yeah, obviously.
Yeah, I want to say
alive.
That's awesome. I'm going to start with the Mafia Royal series now. I mean, I definitely want something that, definitely would want something that was, close to actual, that's cool. I'm going to be one of those people that are going to be reading it going, oh my gosh, this stuff happened. So it's going to be so much fun. Yeah.
You will be. And there's that too.
Now, you mentioned looking over your excerpt and, you're like, oh, gosh, I got to read those words out loud. I have to say, yeah. I feel for you because there was one time we had a guest that did not want to read her excerpt. And, I was volunteered, which is just I think I told you how badly I am. I can read, 5 pages in under a minute. You won't be able to understand it, but I'll get all the words out. And but a couple of the words were bad words, and I'm saying them, and I can feel my face getting hot. And I'm how do some of the girls come on and they just read, cock and, and I'm like, oh, gosh. I say the words, but to read them out loud, it's different. So, I feel for you.
No, what's about? I was just telling my sister here, not in this room, but she's here at my house, and I'm like, it's such a different experience writing something versus reading out loud. It's the same thing when you get made into a movie, you think, oh, that's great dialogue. And all of a sudden you see it on screen. You're like, oh, that's the worst. That's not good at all. So yeah, it's one of those same things. That's it's one of the reasons too, why whenever I write dialogue, I always read it out loud to myself, even if it's awkward and I look like a crazy person, because sometimes it doesn't translate the way you think it's going to.
Exactly. That's
my struggle is reading fast, talking fast. So I apologize. I'll try to slow down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and also, when you're writing it, you can tell yourself, this is the character talking right now. This is so when you read it out loud, it's you reading it,
It's so true. So, actually, my very first reading I did was in front of 200 people and peers, and I remember just getting up and shaking, and it was like a live reading, and I've never been more aware of my own voice and my own insecurities than in that moment. So, yeah, so thanks for this, guys. I appreciate it.
We love it. Yes. So if you want to read the excerpt for us, you can, if you need to set it up or anything, go for it.
Yeah, okay. So the excerpt that I'm gonna read is kind of a sexy one because that's what I promised, right? So Junior is being Serena. Serena is the daughter of Nixon, one of the mob bosses. Junior is the daughter of Phoenix. And they've kind of been, they're friends, but the dads have been kind of at odds for a while. So, if there's anyone that her father would not want her to be with, it would be this guy. So they're sneaking around. They're not supposed to be together. Junior's pretending he's bringing other girls to the house when really it's her, his daughter, that's in the room. So I'm going to read them kind of not getting caught, but kind of them in the moment and just, the tension from them trying to sneak around, knowing that their parents, they had to take a blood oath, the kids, when they were 13, that if they ever got caught, any of them together having sex, that they would get killed. And like a real blood oath, a real thing. So it's not one of those things where oh, my dad's gonna be pissed. It's no, we literally signed a contract in blood that says that my dad will actually have to kill me. So that's how serious they are about because they don't want the bloodlines mixed. They don't want they think that if you have love in the different families and you are mixing together like that, then it's gonna cause a war between the families eventually, kind of Romeo and Juliet style war. So they wanna prevent that. They want to prevent that within the ranks of the five families. So I will start, and I will try, like I said, to go slow, so I apologize if I go too fast. Okay. Junior, Nixon barked, if Serena finds out you brought another whore home, she's going to chop off your balls, cook them into your favorite dish, and feed them to you. Yeah, Junior, Serena murmured with a smirk. I'm going to grab these, she reached for my dick, but I kept her pinned. What, afraid I might have a sharp object? but sharp objects, I whispered. But don't worry, I'm into it. Yeah, you are. Her eyes zeroed in on my mouth. Junior, Nixon yelled again. I'm serious. Let the skank out the back and get ready for breakfast. We need to talk anyways. Sorry, Nixon. Right on it. Actually, I was right on her. I slipped off the door and pressed a heated kiss to her mouth before peeling myself away from her naked skin and then walking towards the bathroom. I heard Serena jogging behind me, felt the slap on my ass, then burst out laughing as I chased her into the shower. She rubbed soap up and down her body. You need some? Nah. I gripped her breast and squeezed lightly, then massaged up and down her stomach using the slickness of her body to roam all over her nakedness. Her breath hitched while I pulled us under the water and captured her mouth in a watery kiss that starved us both of oxygen. She clung to me, her arms wrapped around my neck, her hair sticking to my chin as our foreheads touched. Are you okay? I asked softly. She reached for me and stroked. Do you really think I'd say no to having you any way I can? I cursed as she lifted her right leg and then hooked it around my hip, heaving herself up against my body as I pressed her against the wall. I dug into her ass harder, angling her down onto me. It always felt like a holy experience being with her. Maybe it was because she was it for me, my soulmate, my everything, the other half of my dark, twisted heart. She gripped my head with her hands and licked a trail of water down my neck as her thighs tightened around me. She was close. I could feel it on the way we met thrust for thrust, the way her eyes flashed wild, even though she tried to pretend she was calm. Are you with me? I rasped. She gave me a jerky nod. Always with you. I might have filled her then, but I could have sworn her body was healing me as much as we both found a relief and stared at each other. I'm never letting you go. You know that, right? I slowly pulled back and let her slide down my body. She turned around and gave me her back as I jerked her against me. I think I would die if you did. We were both quiet through the rest of the shower, though I did get my ass grabbed at least a dozen more times before I made my way back to the room and changed. I wasn't sure what Nixon wanted, but the last thing I needed was to look like I just fucked his daughter. The only problem? In the mirror, I looked way too excited to be headed to breakfast. My saving grace was that Ash had landed a few good blows, causing my cheek and my right eye to bruise. Add that to the cuts on my knuckles and I could fake it that I was sore. I could make it look like I was depressed as hell. All I had to focus on was the fact that one of my best friends was hurting, and that my love for my other best friend would one day kill me. Happiness gone. I jerked open the door to the guest room, and when a shadowy figure pushed off the wall out of instinct, I reached for my gun in the back of my jeans. Nixon frowned. Are you going to shoot me? Depends. Are you going to scare the shit out of me all the time? He looked over my shoulder. Where's the girl? I shot him a smug grin and patted him on the shoulder. We all have our secrets, right, Nixon? His eyes narrowed. I heard her. Yeah, I did too. I started walking down the hall all night long. Really? Nixon scowled. Where do you find these girls? You'd be surprised. I shoved my gun in the back of my pants again. Some may say they just fall right into my bed, no questions asked. Who falls into his bed? Breaker asked from the kitchen, holding a glass of orange juice in one hand and bacon in the other. Some girl, Nixon sighed. She snuck out already, though, according to Romeo over here. He jabbed a hand in my direction. Breaker choked into his orange juice and then rasped. Yeah, bet she did, because that's so easy to do in this house. Sneak in and out, right, Junior? I flipped him off, knowing exactly where he was going with that, and I was so pissed at him, which meant I owed him one. Hey, Nixon, did you know Breaker had his tongue down Serena's throat last night for 3.2 seconds? Betrayer, Nixon. Breaker threw his bacon at me. After all I did for you. What, Nixon roared? Breaker ran to the other side of the table and held up his hands. You did what? I was teasing her, Breaker argued. Plus, Junior's just trying to. Why is everyone yelling? Serena waltzed into the kitchen, leaned up on her tiptoes, and kissed her dad on the cheek. His anger disappeared as he pulled her in for a long hug. Nothing. Just don't let Breaker's dirty mouth anywhere near. Ew, he tasted like gin. See? Breaker really needed to stop talking. If I were actually meaning to kiss her, I'd drink whiskey. You know she likes the taste better, right, Junior? I glared. How the hell would I know where Serena puts her mouth? Serena started charging toward me. Here we go, back to the hate. I waited for her to punch me in the face. Instead, she grabbed a fork and held it dangerously close to my cock. What was that, Junior? I grinned. Did she have to be so damn pretty? Her eyes were wild, outlined in black, her lipstick was pale, her blonde hair was pulled into a tight ponytail, and she was wearing the tightest black jeans I've ever seen, not to mention a tank top that showed off a bare midriff. Nixon, don't you think she should put on a sweater or something? Her eyes widened even more as she lowered the fork. Nixon sighed. Serena, don't castrate him. We may need him later, and he's right. Put on a cardigan or something. Fuck, Ash's voice sounded from somewhere in the room. Could you guys please keep it down? I'm trying to die in peace over here. I saw a flash of color. He was in the living room lying on the couch with an empty ball on one hand, and he stared up at the ceiling. Breaker, Serena, and I all shared a look before Nixon sighed and said, we have to wait for everyone else anyway. What for? Serena asked. Nixon gulped and then said, funeral preparations. Shit. In an instant, I was up and making way over to my best friend. He looked like complete shit. Both eyes were swollen shut. One almost completely shut, thanks to my right hook. His body had a few bruises near his shoulder, and his knuckles had dried blood on them. He must have crashed on the couch without bothering to take a shower last night. Bro, Breaker sat on the floor next to him. You smell like shit. Go away. Ash covered his face in his hands. Please, can't do that, cousin. Serena helped Ash to his elbows and scooted underneath him, cradling her head in her lap. What do you need? What's going to make you feel better right now? Death. Other than death, I snapped. The last thing I needed was to lose him, too. The last thing he needed was to lose someone else. When did things get so messed up? And how the hell were we going to survive this? Not just Claire's death, but mine if it came to that. How? The thought haunted me the entire morning as the bosses came over to make arrangements. It was a steady stream of black suits coming in and going out of the house, and Ash refused to get up. At one point, Tank finally found his way into the living room. Breaker offered to share some clothes with him and show him where the showers were. Tank didn't know it yet, but he was in this, part of this now. So him going home and having a normal life now, probably not in the cards. But we let him choose. We always did. I loved her. Ash's voice was so broken. It wasn't supposed to end this way. It's not the end. Serena kept rubbing his black hair from his forehead in soothing strokes. We have to live for her. What would she want you to do? Waste away? I'd seen Ash angry. I'd seen him hurt. But I've never seen the sort of pain twisting his features like it did now. It was uncomfortably raw, like he was broken and could never be fixed. He opened his mouth, but nothing came out, and then he finally confessed something he didn't see coming. She was pregnant, and then it was like he couldn't stop talking. We were fighting so much because she was terrified to bring up a baby in this lifestyle. That's why she wanted normal. That's why she pushed it. She had no clue the thing she fucking pushed was going to end and end up getting her killed. Eyes welled, he gripped me by the shirt and pleaded, please, I can't live like this. I can't. Don't make me. His eyes rolled to the back of his head before he could finish, and when I looked up, it was to see Nikolai with a needle protruding from Ash's neck. What the hell? I roared, jumping to my feet. Nikolai sighed. Let him rest. He's been through a lot. Did you know? Serena asked. Nikolai nodded. His dad's on the way. You think angry Chase Abandonado is going to help the situation? Are you insane? I had to protect Ash, even if it meant from his own father. He needs his family right now, and the only people in his room who know what it's like to love and lose are Sergio and Chase, and I think it should be his own father who helps him heal if he can at all. With that, Nikolai walked away. Tears streamed down Serena's cheeks as she whispered, I can't imagine, Junior, we can't. I gripped her hand. I knew what she was saying. We couldn't let that be us. We needed to be careful, but more than that, we needed each other. Let him sleep, I whispered, helping her out from under his lap. And without thinking, I wrapped an arm around Serena and pulled her against my chest because it was as natural as breathing. Unfortunately, it was the worst timing in the world because that was about the time Chief came around the corner, his gaze flickering from me to her and back again, calculated, cool. He walked right up to us and whispered, I hope like hell you know what you guys are doing. Says the man who told his son to break us up, I sneered under my breath. Forgive me for not feeling very grateful right now. You should be. Chase's eyes were sad. I was trying to save your lives. Don't fight, Serena whispered. Ash needs you. Chase's stance tensed. He was a lethal son of a bitch. He was barely restrained by the rage kept in his soul. The revenge that lurked beneath the surface where his heart should be. I would take it from him if I could. I know, Serena answered. And do me a favor? Anything. Serena had every single boss wrapped on her finger, didn't she? Don't tell my dad. She touched his arm. Ash needs you. Her lower lip trembled as she flicked a glance at me. But I need him. Fuck, Chase bit down on his lip. This conversation never happened, all right? Right, I agreed. Chase held out his hand. I shook it, wondering what the hell he was doing, and then I realized as Serena's eyes filled with more tears, he was giving the blessing her father wouldn't. The end. Not really.
Wow, my nerves. So I don't know if my nerves can take it.
That was some gripping stuff.
Thank you.
And I'm sure James, like this shower scene, he needs some more steam in his life. So you know,
I do. I need some steam, to be honest. Just a little bit of steam. That'd be good. Oh, yeah, to be fair, a little bit of condensation would be okay by me right now. I'm not picky.
No. Now, Rachel, I noticed that was in the male point of view. Do you always write in the male POV, or do you do dual?
So this is going to sound bad. Okay, so typically I do dual, and almost every series I have is dual. The only one that I did just a male point of view to see if I could just do strictly male was my book, The Matchmaker's Playbook, and that was made into a movie. And it was hard because not having another point of view almost makes it detachment happen, you know, between like the reader and the characters. So yeah, but typically I do both. I enjoy the male point of view a lot more, and I don't know why. Probably because I think sometimes, especially in romance, people like to make heroines very weak, and I don't know why that is. Like the guy needs to save, the guy needs to do this, and like for mine, like that's not the case. Like they're always equals. There's always equal ground and footing. Especially in this series, my passion in it was that I wanted to make sure that the girls took as much as the guys did, but they sometimes can come across as being like bitchy or harsh, and so it's always a fine line, you know, to straddle when you're writing those characters.
Yeah, you know, what I thought was interesting was I read a book, well, I don't even think I finished it, but I was reading a book not too long ago, and it was in the male point of view, and I was just I was thinking that guys don't talk like this. Guys don't think things like this, you know. And I have to say, when I was, you know, listening to your male POV, it's not like a guy, you know. So I'm like, okay, good, because that's definitely, I think, for me anyway. I don't know if everybody, you know, feels the same way, but, the, you know, guys and girls were pretty different. And, you know, he would stare at her and they'd be all, like, mushy, gushy. I'm like, do guys really do that? You know, I mean, I don't think they do. So
they
definitely don't. Right. That's what I'm saying. So, I mean, I think we wish that they would, but it doesn't really happen. So,
no, like a guy can be staring at you, or like bacon. I mean, it's not because they're thinking like,
yeah, he's looking at you like he wish you'd make him some bacon. Yeah, there you go.
Right.
Now, you said that this this series is a spinoff of a series that you wrote a long time ago. Is that what you said?
Yeah, so this series,
yeah,
and the other ones, they're the main characters of the other series, and it was when they were in college, was their books. There was like 12 books. It got, I'm sure as you see, when series get really long like that, readers, it's hard. Readers have fatigue, and it's hard for them to keep up, and I was releasing them every few months, and then it turned into like this like phenomenon as like my best-selling series, and then it got to the point where I was like, I can't do book 14, book 15, so I decided to do the, because I figured that my readers would still follow it and still like the whole mafia concept, since it still takes place in the same location, same families. It's just the next generation. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of what I did this book series, to try to still bring parity to everyone and do what I love, which is writing suspense, but also do it in a way that readers felt like they were coming home to something.
I absolutely love a long series. One of my very favorite is a new adult series was about 10 books long, and they were all pretty, you know, pretty lengthy. And, you know, some, we did have some people that complained and, you know, it's too long or whatever. And no, I just loved it. Yeah. That feeling of these are friends. These are, you know, these are, I absolutely love that. So, I can't wait to, I'm going to go shopping on Amazon tonight, but. And what are you, we're getting close to our, the show being over tonight, but tell us what you're working on now.
Oh my gosh, I'm working on a novella called Office Hate. It's kind of like these two interns end up having to go at it against each other, like Hunger Games style, to get the job. So I love enemies to lovers sort of romances. I love banter and just the intensity of that line between love and hate, you know, that it's like very, very close. So the same thing. So I'm writing that, and then I'm also working on a book called My Summer in Seoul, and it is a book about a Asian American girl who goes overseas to work for her uncle at a agency who has a whole bunch of K-pop artists. So I'm really excited about that one, and I have to finish that one in the next few weeks for the deadlines that I have. So it's really good. It's going to be a new adult because she's, you know, 19. So yeah, it's my first time going back into adult and young adult. So I'm really excited about it.
Awesome. I definitely am going to, I'm going to start stalking you way more. It's so exciting and so many things going on. But you have to, first of all, tell us where we can find you online.
Yeah. So you can find me at rachelvandykenauthor.com. If you just type in my name, like Chad said, I think you could probably find me pretty easy. On Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok, it's at RACH, capital V, then Victor, D. And that's usually my handle for all social media, so you can find me anywhere if you type that in. And I try to stay really, really active on Instagram, and I have a Facebook group called Rachel's New Rockin' Readers. We're like almost 11,000 of us as a fan group, and it's a really fun group, and it's not so anyone can join. So that's where to find me.
Awesome. For all of our listeners, go out there and buy Mafia Royal series, The Ruthless Princess by Rachel Van Dyken. And you have to promise to come back and see us.
I promise I will.
Yay. Thank you so much, Rachel. I'm so glad that you came on.
Yeah,
it's been
you.
A great show.
Thank you so much. It's been fun. Thank you for bringing a little bit of steam to my lonely life. Thank you.
You're so welcome. Anytime you need steam, call, okay?
I certainly will. I know where to come. Fantastic. But I'm afraid we're going to have to go. So, good night, Rachel. So have a great rest of your evening up there in the mountains.
Good night.
Okay. Bye-bye. And
that
it is.
So
time
fun.
Has beaten us. I know. What a couple of great guests, you know. But, yeah, again, time has flown by. It is time to say goodnight, Xtina.
Good night, Xtina.
Good night.
Bye.